The who, why, and how of theater we are making right now.
An inside look at Barter Theater.
A year-round repertory theater in Abingdon, Virginia.
This is Theater Matters.
This is Theater Matters.
This is Theater Matters.
This is Theater Matters.
Theater Matters!
Hello and welcome to another episode of Theater Matters. I'm your host, Genny Davis, and today I am extremely excited to be joined by resident acting company member Hannah Ingram. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Hello.
So tell us a bit about yourself first that we may not already know.
Oh gosh, what don't you know? I am not originally from here, in case you can't tell, but I've been here, I'm in my... I believe this is my 11th year in the company. What? Which is crazy since I'm just 16 years old. I came down here in 2008 just for a 7-month contract doing Evita and The Acid Queen in Tommy. And then that was the summer. And then in the fall, I did Beauty and the Beast the first time around. I call it 1.0 and Desperate Hours. And so it was just a 2-season contract, but I just fell in love with it down here. I said to Rick Rose, hey, I love it here. If there's anything you need me for in the future, please keep me on your short list. And he said, well, there happens to be a spot in the resident company that would be a perfect fit for you. Are you serious about moving here, becoming a resident? And I was like, yeah, totally, you know. And I had some moments of, I don't know, as an actor, I came down here from New York City and I'd been up there for a while and, you know, had some really good stuff going on, contacts and auditions and callbacks and things for some national tours and some broad, you know, I was making connections and things. But there's a way of life there that I also, it takes a lot out of you. And I always joke and say, you're a professional auditioner as opposed to a professional actor. And here you get to actually exercise your craft every day, you know? Yeah, I thought about it and there was some demons of like, oh, if you leave New York, even for just a couple years, I'm gonna be going and starting from scratch if I go back. And my father, who you asked kind of how I started, both my parents are actors. I grew up in a theater family and my dad was saying, hey, do what you want, but most people live in New York so they can find work elsewhere. Like, that's why you live in New York. If you've found work elsewhere, to say no to it, to go back to New York to try to find work elsewhere, you know, like, just know that that's what you're doing. And when he put it that way, I was like, yep, thank you. Demons be gone, you know? And I've never regretted it at all, but this business can mess with your head sometimes, so. But yeah.
What else makes Barter special that you wouldn't have perhaps got in New York?
How long have we got? I don't know, I think most people at this point who listen to this understand that Barter's different. It's the only theater that does year-round repertory and actual repertory. A lot of things have that in their title. You know, you'll have like Milwaukee Rep or different rep is in the title of a theater, but it's morphed now where repertory technically means switching back and forth, you know, over a weekend or like what we do in a day. Most people don't do that, can't do that. It's a huge undertaking of labor, you know, manpower, resources, all of that. But it is a very special thing and it's kind of the roots of where theater began. There was an interview, gosh, years ago that I read with Ian McKellen saying that the art of rep theater and playing potentially two different characters in one day or in one season is this lost art. And it used to be something available to people a lot more. And so some of the fine actors that you see, Ian McKellen, of course, but of his ilk and in America, like you just don't see that versatility and ability to kind of invest and invent these different characters and bring them to life in the same way, not poo-pooing anyone. You know, we have amazing actors, but it is a skill and it's one that then when you're only playing one character, you are still enriching it with all of the stuff of how can I make this as different and interesting as possible. So that's one thing that Barter still does that really is the only theater anywhere. I was gonna say in the country, we also have a resident company that's called The Great Experiment, I suppose, is what I've heard it called when they initially, Rick Rose was talking about it, which means that they've got a bunch of people to pull from. But it also means that repertory creating characters, we got to be really good at it because people are seeing the same people every show. So how can we really make sure that we're not boring people by the same old, same old? Another thing that's different here at Barter and in Abingdon than in New York or I shouldn't say any other place, but Barter is such an inherent part of the Abingdon community. And we, as anyone who works for Barter as an employee also, if Abingdon doesn't succeed, Barter doesn't succeed, you know. And you and I were talking the other day about if you go to the grocery store in New York City and you see someone you just saw on Broadway, like, what are the chances of that even happening? And then, hey, then do you feel comfortable going up and just talking to that person? Probably not. You're like, oh, no. Well, here, people come up to us all the time, you know, and you have to say, I'm so sorry. You're used to seeing me. I don't recognize you. What's your name? You know, but it's lovely. You get to have that interaction with people. And in other ways that people maybe don't know, Barter for I think at least a decade now has done every Christmas, we do an auction that benefits United Way of Southwest Virginia. I've been the chairperson for I think this is going to be my fifth year. But basically we auction off, and it's like a big company party in the scene shop, and we auction off items that everyone has made, handmade in some way. And we've raised over $3,000 pretty consistently in one night, which all goes back to United Way of Southwest Virginia. Again, if our region doesn't succeed, we don't. And it's not selfish. It's that kind of, we all cohabit. We all are a cohesive unit. Anyone who doesn't know, I recently ran for a seat on Abingdon's town council. Part of it is and boy, I'm a nerd. I learned so much. I did not win a seat. I may run again in the future, who knows. But I learned so much about our town just by asking questions, just by going and talking to people and finding out what they thought. And I think that that's also an essential part of what makes Barter different, what makes it unique, because I am not the only one that feels that way. It's kind of the basis. It's part of Barter's mission is to make our area better. And then we become better just inherently. So I think we got our priorities straight that way. And I think Barter also does a really good job, and it's something that would have been different from a career in New York or elsewhere due to New York, is I've gotten a chance to play roles that I would never have been cast in traditionally. The theater world, in particular New York, really likes to put people into little notches. You know, you need to know your type, absolutely. If you don't understand how you come across to people, then you're probably going to be going in and putting yourself out for parts that they're just not correct. But Barter often casts against type, which is scary sometimes because you're like, no, but I've built up this skill set. I know how to do this. This is in my wheelhouse. But boy, it is horizon expanding and fun. I get to do stuff that, I mean, I wouldn't have even dreamed of. You get to do dream roles and you get to, to do also undreamed of roles because it just didn't occur to you. So I value that a lot, and it makes you learn so much. So,
and sometimes shows that wouldn't be done elsewhere, like Thicker Than Water.
Oh, yeah. I was just in touch with that playwright the other day because someone was asking for a copy of the script, and I was like, I don't have an electronic copy of it. But yeah, anyone who doesn't know Thicker Than Water, we did that, it was 2013. It was the story of a really poetic and very hard treatment of the Andrea Yates story, who is the woman who drowned her 5 children in Texas. But it was fascinating, the different links that playwright found. But it was not an easy play to do nor to sit through. There's a bathtub full of water featured on stage and drowning of baby dolls. There was also some really cool, beautiful stuff. I don't want to paint that it was just a woman drowning baby dolls. It was a lot of cool stuff. No, not your average theater isn't going to go, yes, let's do that one. But we coupled it with the talkbacks afterward with the community and different mental health associates and inviting audience feedback. There's a saying, theater should make you feel something. Probably the worst feedback you can get is, I didn't really feel one thing either way. If we make someone hate a production or hate a performance, that's okay. At least we made them feel strongly about it. We pushed some button, you know? Same with love. We hope it's love. But, if an audience member had a talk back were to say, oh, I hated this because, that is still valuable information. And it is still something that they felt strongly enough about it to speak and put their thoughts into words, which is, that's a good thing. More people need to do that. And theater has a good way of doing that. So, but overall, we got a lot of really interesting feedback and thanks for doing postpartum people know about postpartum depression, but postpartum psychosis is what Andrea Yates suffered from, and it's lesser known, lesser talked about. People like to sweep things under the rug. And so we actually got a lot of people saying, thank you for doing this. I experienced something similar, and people being afraid to even say that in the talk back. And it's like, hey, you know, you're safe here. We all just watched the same thing. So, yeah.
Friendly's Fire is another great example of that.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, Friendly's Fire we did last fall by John Patrick Bray. Oh, I should say Thicker Than Water was by Douglas Parker. But yeah, Friendly's Fire was another one where we involved the social commentary afterwards with talkbacks. We had that one panel, which was really beautiful, with a bunch of veterans from various wars, because we were always hesitant. It's not a play about post-traumatic stress disorder. No one's going to come see that play, you know? But it's a guy who suffers from that, who happens to be... he gets accidentally drugged by someone who steals his tooth, and it kind of sends him on this epic kind of quest in his mind where he confronts certain PTSD demons along with guilt from the loss of his brother and things like that in this zany, fun, wild ride. And you go, how did this playwright manage to do this? But yeah, it was so moving. And then to talk to some of the veterans afterwards and say, yeah, I know it sounds crazy, but this is a really spot-on depiction of kind of how we see the world. And, you know, really? Okay, wow. I just realized something. Both of those featured a bathtub center stage at stage two. So keep an eye out, folks. If there's a bathtub in it, it's going to be good. Nice, clean play.
Hannah, why does theater matter to you?
Again, here we are. Okay, so we're sitting, you guys, I'm going to paint a picture. We're sitting in Gillum Stage right now, which is formerly known as the main stage, and it's quiet. There's empty seats. There's one ghost light on stage, and the sister act set is on stage right now because we have a matinee later on today. As we sit in a theater, I've spent my life sitting in rehearsal rooms. I love sitting in rehearsal. Oh my gosh, I just love sitting and watching rehearsals. I'm such a nerd. And I love empty theaters. I would come with my parents ahead of time. They'd be working on stuff, and I'd sit and play cards or draw. But there's something about an empty theater that, like, it almost kind of crackles because it's going to be filled. You know, the energy that happens in live theater is unlike anything else. I think the closest you can come is a sporting event with everyone's focus watching this one thing and reacting to it as a communal response. And everyone has different varied responses, and you want that. But there's the give and the take. TV definitely doesn't do that. Movies don't do it. There's not the same give and take where, oh, we hold for laughter or we hold for a moment based on what we feel from the audience. And the audience reacts to exactly what we do, like moment to moment to moment. And that, especially now with the advent of technology and social media, where there's so many more buffers between people, I think it's more important than ever. It's always, I mean, ancient Greek and Roman times it was important, but now more than ever it touches us in a way that we can't really find anywhere else. So here we sit in this empty theater and there's just so much, it's just waiting. It's like that moment right before at the top of a roller coaster where you're about to go down, you know, that like, okay. I think it's, that's why I think theater is so important. And I read, can't remember if I read this, or someone told me that they read it. So there's my disclaimer. But apparently a study was done where heartbeats were measured in a theater watching a play of the audience members. And after, like, I think it was like 20 minutes or something of settling in and watching the play, the heartbeats started to kind of synchronize. So like everyone's heartbeat kind of started to like beat pretty much at the same time. And like, that's astonishing and really cool. Let's say true or not, that idea is exactly what I'm talking about. It feels like that's what happens. Whether it actually scientifically does every time or not, to me, is kind of moot point. You know, it's the fact that it has the capacity to do that and make us feel that way and react amongst each other and to each other. I just think it's beautiful.
So what are you working on right now? All sorts of things,
yes.
I know.
Oh, it's barter. So I am performing in the Sister Act, which is the Gillum Stage production this summer. I play one of the backup dancers, Tina, at the beginning. She likes to chew gum. And I play one of the nuns in the ensemble. So that's been very fun. one of my first professional shows was Nonsense. So I'm back in the habit again. And then across the street, I am in Madame Buttermilk, which we've done a reading of in the AFPP, and then we did the mini production, and now we are in full production over there, over at Stage 2. And I play Dodie, who is, Carly is the lead, and she comes in, she is technically Madame Buttermilk, and she comes in to replace me because I have lost my voice due to a tonsillectomy and can't do a big show. But I have a solo song in which I don't sing. Come see the show. No, when I first read that in the first readings and things like that and Choice, I laughed. It's so my sense of humor to give a song to someone who literally just mimes the lyrics. I think it's very funny. So I'm enjoying myself. And we're performing those two, but we've started rehearsals for the fall. So it's kind of nice. I don't have to sing or speak in the one show because I'm playing the lead in Bridges of Madison County this fall. I play Francesca, the Italian Iowa housewife, and she doesn't ever really shut up. So the only time she shuts up is when Robert gets to sing. So it's nice to have a little break and I can work on some of my soprano chops. And then the other thing in the fall that I'm working on opposite is I'll be playing Lena Lamont in Singing in the Rain. So I think Tina with the gum chewing might be a descendant of Lena Lamont because I think they're kind of similar in the voice. We'll see, though. Lena and Tina should do a duo.
You should. For late night cabaret. You just had a fun experience yesterday in filming the scenes for...
Yeah. Singing in the Rain. Yeah.
Tell us about that.
The silent movie sections. I think most people know Singing in the Rain, but just a little recap. It takes place in the era where silent movie stars and Hollywood doing the silent movies just finally introduced this idea of the talkie, where you could actually have sound corresponding with the action in the movie. So the first part of Singing in the Rain features Don Lockwood and Lena Lamont, who is like the studio stars for the silent movie, which is fortunate since Lena sounds so terrible when she actually speaks. But we have to show some of the silent movies on the film, so we have to film them ahead of time. So there's a lot of stuff, unlike other shows where we rehearse, we actually have to capture some things on film early to be able to rehearse. So we went over to the Martha Washington Inn in costumes, looking like, I don't know what, 17th century France, I think. It was called The Royal Rascals is the sections that we were filming. And it's just so silly because we are respecting the silent movie era, and yet there are things to poke fun at. There are things that we now in 2018 look at and we go, oh, that's so cheesy, or that's where an audience then would go, oh, this is perfect. This is exactly what I'm used to seeing. So finding that balance of spoofing, sending up of that style, while also with all the love and respect in the world, it was really fun. Because you'd try something and Rick Rose would go, that might be a little too much. Try something different. You try something else that feels like just as much. And he's like, yeah, that's perfect. So it's like, oh, okay. It's a very fine line. But yeah, all of us just being over in the Martha in those beautiful rooms and things like that and the decor, it just kind of fit. And you look over and someone looks like a musketeer and very silly, but very fun.
This may be a little too philosophical.
Never, Kenny. Never.
You haven't even started Singing in the Rain yet. You're in rehearsals for this show, but you still had to be in character for this film that you were recording. So how do you, we talk about growth mm-hmm. as an actor or as a character. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to that, where you are that character that you know at that moment mm-hmm. when it was filming, then you're going to come in. How do you keep that balance of sort of still sticking to what you brought to it months before it ever got right. onto the stage?
Yeah, that's interesting. I did think about that going into it because it was like, ooh, even more so there's a couple sections we have not filmed yet where we're filming something in silent film that then they later on then they go, no, we're deciding to make this a talking picture, and you'll see us rehearsing the talking picture later. So technically there are two different instances. But yeah, if they look wildly different, and if certain hand gestures and physicalography of like tapping him with the fan and stuff doesn't look like it's the same kind of idea, it's like watching something without continuity. Yeah. The good news is what we did yesterday, I was never on film as Lena. It was Lena playing this character, the silent movie character. So that can, and it stands alone. So what we did yesterday, I didn't have to worry too much about, but I think that's the thing to keep, that I'll be keeping in mind is, especially on those other ones that we soon film, is, okay, let me remember, like, how can I attach, like, this is what she thinks she's doing. This is how she thinks she's coming across when she taps him on the shoulder with the fan. So that little kind of nugget is, I can still think I'm doing that when I'm on stage. You know, oh, she's found a certain flair to it. And I think if you find a couple of those things, that will read more than anything else. The other good news is we watch them rehearsing, and then later on we see the film. It doesn't mean they necessarily took the same take as what the audience saw us rehearsing. So there's that. But yeah, it is. It's just like continuity in film. And I always think, oh, I think I'd be terrible at that. Like rehearsing scenes out of order, I guess you get good at it, but that's one thing we do rehearse out of order in theater, but the actual show itself, you get to go on the journey from start to finish every night over and over and over again. So that I like that a little bit more than having to be like, oh, this is where we're going to film the last scene of the film on the first day and never go back to it. It's like, oh gosh, how do I know where we got to and how, you know? So, yeah.
While we're on the topic of acting and sort of the principles of it, you taught an acting class I had the great pleasure of being a part of. At the core of acting, though, because we don't often talk about this on the show, we're talking about shows we're doing and stuff, give our listeners sort of what acting is at the core and what it's built upon.
Well, Kenny, you were in my class. You tell me. I should have brought my notes from my first day of class. Its core, I think it is truthfully listening and responding. And that can have some leeway in it from night to night. The reason you rehearse is so that, you know, everyone's on the same page as far as we've all read the same script. We are all standing on the same set and we know we have to get from point A to point B from the start to the finish of the play. But the ways of getting there are countless, you know? So you rehearse to start to find the parameters of like, okay, this choice that I tried that one day in rehearsal or that my scene partner tried doesn't fit with what we're doing. Great, we tried it. Now we know we can cross that off the list. So you kind of establish the parameters for yourself and for each other and the world you're creating. And then within those parameters, you are free to just live in the moment and experience listening to what the other person is saying and truthfully trying to feel that you've never heard it before, which is sometimes the hardest thing. Like, we all know our lines, and by the end of a run you pretty much know everyone else's lines. And in that way, I love it because you kind of get to reinvent every time and discover something new if you're truly listening. And sometimes not. Sometimes the familiarity of something is good, but you still have to put those new ears on there, those new eyes of, I've never done this before. And I just find that kind of a refresh. You get to refresh your browser every time in a way, you know? And then the other thing is that I think is important is we talk about plays and musicals are good ones are hopefully written about the day when something does happen. Something is out of the ordinary. So, because there can be something complacent about just listening and responding. Like, we all need to do that better in our lives, but why are people going to pay money to come see that? And I think it's the authenticity of truly allowing for the impulses in the moment and like, oh, I'm going to try something slightly different, or that hit me a different way, I heard that differently, and the audience can see that. You go to kids shows and they see right through if you're not, and hopefully adults do too. But that, like, the day that something happens is something out of the ordinary. I think the other key to that is that there is a dynamicness that inherent. You don't necessarily need to put that on, but if I want to watch someone truthfully listen and respond, you are also on the stage and people have paid money to see it. So letting it all happen internally, it should be happening internally, but if that's the only place it's happening, so I like to add to it listening and responding dynamically. Because the other thing that I think people come to see theater is to see people do and react and and live in the moment in a way that they don't always feel free to, that they wish they could. Or, you know, I think one of the best things that anyone has ever said to me was like, whew, that was really brave. And you're like, it kind of is. You know, for we do this all the time, getting up on stage and just kind of opening and letting yourself be a conduit for what this play is doing, it is kind of brave. And people don't usually open up to that. They like to know what's going on, when it's happening, and have control over it. And there's a little bit of lack of control, free fall, within reason, of course. But I think that's the best thing, is to stimulate an audience member to be like, whew, that was brave. Because that means they had access to what was going on in you and around you and all of you, and that it sparked something in them to be like, oh, I wish I could do that, or oh, I could never do that, or what would it be like if I did that, or what would I do in that situation? That's the best thing I can think of.
Speaking of folks that wonder what it would feel like, and in that context, you probably meant perhaps as a character in that play, but somebody that would be interested in knowing what it would feel like to be an actor, or are interested in going in that field, what advice would you give them?
People watch, for sure. We did an Inside the Actor Studio thing a couple years ago, and there's that list of questions that gets asked at the end, and people kind of giggled when they said, okay, if you couldn't be an actor, what other job would you like to do? And I said FBI profiler. Without the blood, though. Like, I don't want to see any, like, dead body pictures and stuff, because right. I'm not good at that stuff. But just the idea of figuring out what makes people tick, whether it's their brain or their baggage or their past, or the human behavior will never stop being fascinating to me. And unlocking certain keys only then finds you other things of, oh, but then that led me to this, which I have no idea. But the study of it is fascinating. So if you aren't going to be a student of human behavior and a problem solver in that sense, then you might not enjoy No problem, do other things that you love. But I think the minute you stop being hungry to figure that stuff out, you probably shouldn't be doing this anymore, because you might not be truthfully investigating and representing all these different things. But the good news is, so many people do love to investigate human behavior. The other thing is, I mean this in the best of ways, but people can take it negatively. So please don't. Don't try to even go into this unless you're prepared to work hard. When people come to see plays and musicals, you're often seeing the product of hours and hours and hours of work, and not just rehearsing the play. I'm talking about training. I'm talking about getting up and warming up your voice before shows. I'm talking about the heartache of how many auditions someone went to before they landed a part, those things. And the goal is, you shouldn't ever see all of those hours. You should be there to have a good time and see the end product. That's the point. But it doesn't mean that those hours don't exist, that the discipline and the mindset of hard work, actors and theater people in general, are some of the hardest working people I've ever met. And they know just like on a sports team, there's a teamwork mentality that you have to keep at the front of your brain at all times. And the discipline, that there's a great joy in doing your job well, that not everyone has. I hate to say anymore, you know, back in my day. But a lot of people work so hard trying to find ways around getting the job done. And sometimes I laugh because I'm like, and I'm talking in life. And I'm like, if you spent as much time just working on getting the job done well as you do with finding ways around getting the job done at all, or at least well, you would have more time to do the things you love, and you would also have that joy that, I don't know, innately, I thanks mom and dad, like, I like doing my job. I like the end of the day. And that's something that I prize so much about people at Barter, is we all, the teamwork mentality of let's all do this and let's do it the best we can is front and center, you know? So, but it's necessary. We've all worked with people in all walks of life who don't have that. And that's not necessarily fun, and you probably shouldn't go into theater. If you're kind of looking for the way that where you can do the least amount and still get credit, probably don't do theater. It will show, or we'll find you out somehow. And I also say, just on a basic level, get into some dance class, get into some vocal lessons, and I'm not just talking about singing and dancing, I'm talking about physical presence and vocal presence and health. That's part of the discipline. It's part, I took dance all my life. I'm now not cast as often in dance roles, but I know how to move my body. I know what certain poses look like. I have a musicality, because there are things that trickle down into other elements of your life where I could walk into a job interview for an office job, but the way I carry myself, I'm aware of how to exude a confidence and how to feel comfortable in my own body. And that's huge. It has nothing to do with theater, but it's a huge skill that theater can lend you too. So, yeah.
Well, I wish we had so much more time to sit and chat, but we are fresh out of time. So thank you so much for joining me today.
My pleasure.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Theater Matters. You can hear this podcast live by going to WEHCFM.com or tune in to 90.7 FM WEHC each Friday at 1:30 p.m. Don't forget to check out all the fantastic things Barter Theater is doing right now. To see the schedule and purchase tickets, visit our website at bartertheater.com or call and speak to our friendly box office staff at 276-628-3991. In the meantime, thank you for listening, and we look forward to you joining us again soon.